This is Jordan Seculo. New allegations that the Clinton State Department offered bribes to the FBI.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live.
We have the documents now from the FBI, and apparently that language is used. Quid pro quo, this for that. How does this relate now to what was happening in the Department of State? How does it relate to Hillary Clinton's emails that had a classified marking on them and whether or not that classified marking was removed?
And the critical FBI interview known as a 302, it's from July 30th, 2015, with a senior FBI official who runs what's called the Records Management Office. And let's go to the critical section of the paragraph. It says, redacted, that is the FBI agent involved, indicated he had been contacted by Patrick Kennedy, Undersecretary of State, who had asked his assistance in altering the email's classification in exchange for a quid pro quo. Redacted, that's the FBI agent again, advised that in exchange for marking the email unclassified, State would reciprocate by allowing the FBI to place more agents in countries where they are presently forbidden.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Operation got underway about 4 o'clock in the morning local time after Prime Minister Abadi announced the operation had begun. The U.S. and the coalition there began the airstrikes and artillery. This fight will take some time, but this is the last town that ISIS holds, and they have lost to Crete, Fallujah, and Ramadi. And so there is every expectation that this coalition will be able to push ISIS out.
Well, I think that we have gotten ourselves into a place here in Iraq, and you see what just happened in Yemen. You see what's going on in Syria. I mean, we have a sort of an unfolding or an unraveling of the Middle East, and it's happened over the last couple of years because we've given ourselves fewer options to be able to do the kinds of things we need to do.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Sekulo Live. This is Jordan Sekulo. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And a hello to our Facebook and Periscope audience as well. Get your comments in and participate in the show that way. A lot to talk about. We have a presidential debate, the final presidential debate this week on Wednesday evening between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And certainly there's new information, as you heard in the open of the broadcast, contained in FBI interview files. These are files that Congress requested be made public. We heard about these allegations last week and over the weekend by Chairman Jason Chaffetz, a congressman from Utah who chairs the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, that, and we've seen this report a number of times, but we haven't had the actual document to point to it, that one of the individuals at the FBI, interviewed by the FBI about the email classification, the Hillary Clinton, the scandal ongoing there, and how they would release the emails, was pressured by an undersecretary of state. So this is the officials right below the secretary of state. He's the undersecretary of state for management, Patrick Kennedy, who asked, and the actual FBI agent said quid pro quo in their interview with the FBI about this. So quid pro quo, this for that, something for something. You do this, I'll do that. And what he said is if you change the email classifications from classified to unclassified, I will allow you, the FBI. So I'm assuming that this individual, the undersecretary at the FBI, at the State Department was speaking to at the FBI, was high ranking enough to offer these positions at the FBI, that they said, well, if you do this for us and change the email classifications on Hillary's emails, we will allow you, the FBI, to put more people out in countries that you have requested that you haven't been allowed to because of our diplomatic arrangements. First of all, think about the national security risk. Playing around with our diplomacy for email classification. So what emails would get classified markings and what would not. Add to that, in more of these Podesta, now this was not a leaked document, by the way, but in the Podesta documents that keep leaking out through WikiLeaks, you've got him complaining that the shooters in San Bernardino weren't a white guy, that it wasn't a guy named Chris Hayes, instead it was Saeed Farouk. And you've got these email back and forth complaining about that. I think it's all national security. We've got the battle to retake Mosul. We're going to get into that as well. Take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110.
That's right. You can also join us on Facebook and Periscope, broadcasting live right now. Again, 1-800-684-3110, or join us facebook.com/JSeculo, Periscope, search for Jay Sekulo, or Twitter @JSeculo.
The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over a million babies. That's two babies killed every minute, every hour of every day. It's horrendous and unthinkable. The abortion industry even sells these murdered babies' body parts for profit. It's our duty to end these atrocities. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. This case could devastate big abortion. We're battling the abortion industry's billion-dollar taxpayer-funded resources in multiple federal courts. And we could not succeed without your support. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. A big presidential debate, the final debate of this election process. Can you believe it, folks? Will be Wednesday evening between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now, Hillary Clinton is facing new scandal in the ongoing release of documents. Now, we've got 100 more pages of documents released by the FBI today as part of their investigation into the Clinton email scandal. Well, this was the private server. This was the classification of what emails would be made public, which wouldn't be made public. And within these documents, Fox News has got this story, and we've heard it reported before, but we couldn't point to the specific document because the document was not made public. Congress had it, but it was not yet available to those of us in the public. And in this document, there is an individual who's being interviewed by the FBI who works at the FBI. Their name is redacted, but they were high-ranking enough to be contacted by an undersecretary of state. That's a very high-ranking State Department official. And they advised that they had asked for assistance in, quote, altering the email's classification in exchange for a, quote, quid pro quo. That means this for that, something for something. And then redacted, the person advised that in exchange for marking the emails unclassified, these are Hillary Clinton's emails, the State Department would reciprocate by allowing the FBI to place more agents in countries where they are presently forbidden. Let's break that down. One, they are bribing or offering a bribe to the FBI to change email classifications. Two, willing to change our diplomatic policies. So those are policies the State Department said, we don't have agreements with these countries to allow FBI agents in. So we're not going to risk it by putting them in covertly. You know, we know that we operate with intelligence officials all over under the guise of our State Department and ambassadors. But these were countries where they said, no, we're not going to risk that. But they were willing to put our national security at risk for this quid pro quo so that they could get email classifications changed. Now, I want to, again, underscore this, folks. This is all information the FBI had. Jim Comey had this information. And still, this official, like Undersecretary Patrick Kennedy, did he face charges? No. Did the FBI, anyone there, face charges? No. This is what is so absurd about this matter. Let me go to Than Bennett, our Director of Government Affairs in Washington, D.C. Than, to me, in this campaign cycle, if it were any other cycle, information like this would be so damaging to a candidate like Hillary Clinton, you would say this election is over. But yet, the latest polls over the weekend still show her holding on to a lead. She has not yet crushed Donald Trump, even with all the revelations about him and I think the tarnishing of him, if you will. But she's still holding on to a lead. In a normal election process, this would be this front and center story everybody was talking about. And yet we don't know if Hillary Clinton's opponent, Donald Trump, will make this front and center on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I think that's unquestionably accurate, Jordan, and really for two reasons. Number one, the source is impeccable. I mean, these are the 302s from the FBI investigation. This is not a leaked email. This is the actual interview summaries from the FBI, so we know the information is solid. But second, Jordan, this is, and I think you used the right word here, I think it's a bribe. I mean, we've used quid pro quo, but it's a bribe. It is the State Department bribing the FBI to change classification on national security matters to something that they can then withhold from the public. Again, that's the motivation here. It's not that they were trying to protect information that was necessarily sensitive. It was that they did not want to provide this information to Congress and ultimately the American people who would be voting. I would say that kind of misuse of office would be a campaign ender and probably a career ender for most politicians. This is not a usual campaign cycle. At this point, Hillary Clinton still has a pretty formidable lead in the polls.
Yeah, and you add to that, you've got... These were not leaked documents. I want to underscore what Dan said, that these documents were legitimate. These are the actual FBI interview forms. These are the notes that they were taking during the interviews with the various people they interviewed. But in a new leak that we've got over the weekend from WikiLeaks, actually today, in Podesta, who is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign, John Podesta, is in an email exchange. He is lamenting that a Muslim, not a white man, was named as a killer in the 2015 massacre in San Bernardino. So you got that on top of the legal issues Hillary Clinton is facing. And yet, Logan, still this big question mark remains, is that the focus of this campaign?
Right. And I would not be willing to bet on it. It's one of those things where it seems to be personal matters. And those are the situations that are getting the headlines each and every day. And the emails are becoming very secondary. And whether that's falling into traps or whether that's the Clinton campaign knows something is about to come and they have something ready to also put out that is bigger and badder and worse and at least more tantalizing for mainstream media, that could be what we're seeing here. And it's very calculated and actually very good strategy.
Every time one of these major document dumps has occurred, the Clinton campaign has released something personal on Donald Trump that has given the media the ability to choose between the stories, and they go with the salacious. They go with the one, you don't have to explain quid pro quo. You don't have to explain undersecretaries of state talking to redacted FBI. And, you know, it gets all kind of complicated for people. It's easier to talk about the salacious stories.
Right.
And so my question is, at 4 o'clock today, Eastern time, before you get into the nightly news, will we have another document dump, or another dump by the Clinton team of opposition research against Donald Trump that's personal? Now, the big question is, how much do they have left? I would always assume that campaigns, traditional campaigns, have negative information about the opposing candidate to release up until just a couple days before Election Day. And now with early voting that begins in different states at different times, but you assume that there's also many people voting early, you add that to the mix, you start dumping that information even earlier and earlier in the process. So is that coming later today? I want to take people's phone calls about it, 1-800-684-3110. The battle to retake Mosul from ISIS. We don't want to downplay this, though it hasn't gotten as much media attention. It got the attention yesterday when the battle was officially launched. There are U.S. Troops, military involved in this, 5,000, in fact. They are not on the front line, but they will be at some point. We don't exactly have the reports yet, but when the military various coalition members enter the city of Mosul, so will our U.S. troops who are there. So they'll be directly, I think it's safe to say, in harm's way. We have pilots, you know, dropping, leading the air campaign against this. This is the last remaining ISIS stronghold in Iraq. Obviously, they've still got their strongholds in Syria, but this is very significant to the battle against ISIS. We're going to get into that later in the broadcast, but I don't want to downplay that and not give attention to it. But we do have this election. I think that will have to be part of, obviously, the discussion on Wednesday night, and national security is supposed to be a focus there. But let's get to the phone calls.
Let's go to Paul in York, PA. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate the show. I just wanted to ask, these emails with the new information coming out, they seem to be kept getting swept under the rug. They seem to really be bashing Trump, and there's nothing being done or nothing being said on the media about any of this, she's still held in high regard. And I'm just wondering on your opinion, does Trump really still have a chance? Or are we just saying, hey, he has no chance, we might as well just consider Hillary the next president?
You know, that's interesting. There, you definitely have some in the media who have tried to make it out to be, Paul, that this is over. Washington Post basically wrote a story saying the question is not will Hillary Clinton win, but it's what additional states will she add to the Democrat mix. So you have a poll out in Georgia, for instance, which is a decidedly typically red state. Hillary Clinton supposedly has a 3-point lead there. But there's the issue right there. Could it be a blowout, Paul? Yes. But is it done and over? Not based off the polls. Based off the polls, they're still within the margin of error.
Right.
And I think that is because Hillary Clinton is still very unlikable. She still has these scandals. Whether or not they're getting the media attention they should or not, ultimately, she is so unlikable that she's not beating Donald Trump. Yeah. She's right. A better candidate would be beating Donald Trump by 50 points right now. She's just not that candidate.
It's the same. We kind of said it. We should go both ways. It would be if a better candidate was running against Donald Trump, she'd be... Or that person, whoever the Democratic Party nominee, would be slamming. Should be just be, you know, blowing up. It'd be amazing. The other way, same thing. If this was anyone else against Hillary Clinton, I think we'd see the same thing. What would feel like a landslide of movement. But the fact we have two not lovable characters that are not party's nominees, we're seeing a general lack of interest. And so far, people aren't really moving, shifting, maybe small percentages here and there, because people just don't know what to do. And honestly, may just be worn out by all of this.
Than, what do you think about this idea of rigged elections? You got a lot of criticism there, people saying, listen, we know there's voter fraud. Those issues exist. We've at the ACLJ fought for tougher voter protection laws to protect the integrity of our elections. Some of those have gone to court, have been upheld. Some have not. But ultimately, there's been a lot of criticism by Trump that he's undermining potentially our democratic process in America, which is still the best of any country in the world, by making these allegations preemptively.
Yeah, that's how I would respond, Jordan. I mean, voter fraud does exist, but we have the greatest, freest election system in the world. And honestly, it's up to the two campaigns to ensure that it stays that way. These are state-run elections, and they have the ability to send teams of lawyers in to make sure it happens. So honestly, I would like to see that energy funneled into making sure that our free way of elections continues to be that way. I would rather him not talk about rigged elections.
Why did Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman respond to an email about the San Bernardino shooting when they named the shooter as Saeed Farouk? Quote, better if a guy named Saeed Farouk was reporting that a guy named Christopher Hayes was the shooter. So it was about who was involved, not the tragedy that was occurring. Folks, we'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Help us fight for life. Go to aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over 1 million babies. That's 2 babies killed every minute, every hour of every day. It's horrendous and unthinkable. The abortion industry even sells these murdered babies' body parts for profit. It's our duty to end these atrocities. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. This case could devastate big abortion. We're battling the abortion industry's billion-dollar taxpayer-funded resources in multiple federal courts. And we could not succeed without your support. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are discussing the breaking news this morning, which it's I think very important because we've got the final presidential debate on Wednesday. This news that's confirmed what we've reported before here, that there was an FBI agent in their interview with the FBI about the Clinton email scandal and controversy. That when they had to sit down with their counterparts at the FBI to discuss this and what was happening, that they were said in the report, and now we have the actual document. You can get it off the FBI's website, FBI.gov, so the actual document. They said, quote, that redacted, this is the person being interviewed, advised that the Clinton State Department official, Patrick Kennedy, who was an undersecretary of state, in exchange for marking some of Clinton's emails unclassified, quote, the State Department would reciprocate by allowing the FBI to place more agents in countries where they are presently forbidden. Realize the State Department was saying, we'll let you do more, FBI, offering a bribe if you do this for us, if you'll unclassify some emails. Now, why is that significant? If the emails were unclassified, they weren't violating the same kind of laws. Second part why it's significant, a bribe being offered to another, from one government agent to another government agent, another appointee. Number three, putting our national security at risk. This is not a leaked document. This is an official FBI document that is out today. It's called a 302. It's an interview note form. The FBI has released it. This is very significant. It is starting to break more and more in the news. My question is this: politically, will the Clinton team respond with more Donald Trump salacious allegations to cover this up for the nightly news cycle? It's not so much the daytime news cycle, Logan. We know that. It is, can they stop the nightly news from reporting it or spending as much time on it? What do they have to release? And I don't say this to be cynical, but we're 2 days before the final presidential debate. We're 3 weeks away from the general election.
Sure.
You assume that when there's bad info about you coming out, you're going to try and release bad info about your opponent to cover it up.
And they've done that pretty well. And yeah, as we saw this weekend, Trump was kind of stuck with the allegations, having to deal with that again, stuck with going after Saturday Night Live. And you know, he got caught up in that web again. So the fact there's something that is potentially damning for the Clinton campaign to not come out and have something in response would be very unlikely. Even last week, Friday, we talked about that Mike Pence was going to have, they were going to make that announcement of what the proof was.
There was one email from one person of the nine, or now it's 10, women who accused Trump. And listen, you could get into whether or not a lot of those stories, but let's just...
There's a lot of rhetoric.
Yeah, you hear rhetoric like we're going to disprove all this, and there's one email where one of the women looks like they were, even though they made these allegations, they'd also invited Trump during a campaign stop at their business. Now, you could also say, well, yeah, I mean, for your business, it would still be good to have him there, even if you thought it was bad, because it gives you publicity. On the other hand, it may undermine that one person, but there's nine other people. Why have Mike Pence? We were very critical about it because you had Mike Pence go out and say, we've got all this evidence. And the truth is, there's so much covering Trump that they didn't even get heavily criticized for that.
No.
Because where were the people calling him out saying, you told us there was going to be all this evidence? I think it's because they're just letting him unravel. They're letting him, in their minds, they believe he's unraveling. The question is, will they pile on today? I want to play this soundbite, why this is significant, this new information in the Clinton emails. This is Judge Napolitano on Fox News discussing why the offer itself is criminal in nature. So the FBI, they're already saying, we didn't do it. We didn't accept this offer. That's fine for them. That doesn't mean what the State Department did wasn't criminal. Take a listen. Bite 29.
Jason Chaffetz said this over the weekend on screen for your viewers, quoting, in return for altering the classification, the possibility of additional slots for the FBI admissions overseas was discussed, end quote. But the mere discussion of that is what you find offensive. Last word, Judge.
The mere discussion of it is itself a crime. It is a crime to bribe someone. It is a crime to offer to bribe someone. This was at best a bribe and at worst an offer to bribe.
All right, so folks, that again, I think it makes it very clear for people why this is more important than just sounds bad, looks bad. I mean, you've got these legal concerns. This will be a focus of the news if the Trump campaign, one, pushes out correctly, and two, the Clinton campaign doesn't have more dirt to dump on Donald Trump. You think about this scorched earth. People talk about the Trump campaign scorched earth kind of strategy. Clinton campaign, same way. At this point, you're 3 weeks out. You put the dirt out when you need to, if you've got it. I mean, and so, and you don't really worry about, I think they tested this information too to see if it would bring up too much of the Bill Clinton past, because a lot of, there's plenty of voters who have kind of forgotten about that or moved on from that. And I think that they realize it doesn't, that it just doesn't stick. It seems very outdated and old when they show that info now. What to some of us still seems very current, to others doesn't anymore. And then you see the footage and it looks old. So they've made that decision. Let's go to the phones, and I'll go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C.
All right, let's go to Kelly in Oklahoma, line five.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
Good. I actually have two questions for you gentlemen. The first one is if they can get around the State Department filing charges against Hillary Clinton, with all the information that's come out, I don't understand, number one, how they aren't filing charges against some of her aides in Podesta when it's clear information that they've broken the law.
Yeah.
My second question is a little off topic. The other question I have is, what's going on with Assange? I'm sure you've seen online where they said the state party has disconnected his use of the internet. Yeah. Number one, how is that legal and binding? And what are all the codes that he's dropping? He's dropped about four, what people are calling dead man codes or secret codes.
Yeah, I mean, let me say on the prosecutions, I think we're right. We're not going to see movement by this FBI or this Department of Justice, so long as it's controlled by the Obama administration, which is until January, on any of these officials. These would have been the easy people, and I say that, I mean, like an undersecretary of state, you could have gone after them. And I think the FBI, if they wanted to save face, I mean, this may sound, again, crass and cynical, but if they wanted to save face, legally pursuing some of these matters for prosecution, these would have been ongoing in court for years. But legally pursuing this would have made a much stronger case at the FBI. I mean, you got individuals alleging at the FBI that they were offered a quid pro quo. Go after that undersecretary of state. But these were people very close to the Clinton team. So that's part one. Part two, Donald Trump said he's not going to, if he was elected president, he will instruct his Department of Justice, FBI, to look into these individuals. So they could still be prosecuted. There's not a double jeopardy issue. People ask about that because there were not actual charges brought against these people. There were investigations that were closed. You can reopen investigations. Now, number three, let's talk about Julian Assange quickly.
Yes.
WikiLeaks, if not for being Donald Trump, would have probably ended this campaign for Hillary Clinton a number of times. It hasn't made that kind of it. Maybe this story is that story. But so far, it is the reason why it stayed close. Now, what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are doing is not legal. And we have to make that clear for everybody. They've become a little bit of heroes to conservatives. They were not 2 years ago. And so you got to like...
They would not like to hear that.
Right. I mean, but yet he'll do interviews on Fox News with Sean Hannity. That's new. That's new. I mean, these were the same people who 2 years ago were calling for him to be, you know, arrested and tried. And,
right.
And I just want to point out, one, what they're doing is not legal. Number two, you have his internet being cut off. Reports of, you know, is he alive or not? Listen, Hillary Clinton did say in an email, can we just drone him? You know, that did come out. Can we drone him? That means, can you kill him by drone? So, I mean... Would the Clinton campaign want to risk that backlash between, I think, a lot of liberal voters? I don't know.
But to kind of understand what you're saying, there's a lot of things that came out late last night, what they called the dead man swap codes or something like that, which was something you put out if he was killed. Now, those have been refuted, but they did make a statement that said Julian Assange's internet link has been intentionally severed by a state party. We've activated the appropriate contingency plans.
Yeah.
So... That's still breaking, but very quiet on major news sources.
Yep, go to ACLJ.org. We've got a second half hour coming up. Don't miss it.
The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over 1 million babies. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or online aclj.org.
Jay Sekulai for our second half hour. We thank our Facebook and Periscope audience for those of you holding on the phones. Let's just cover a few stories that are breaking and are, you know, today and over the weekend. One, the battle for Mosul. We're going to get into this in the next segment of the broadcast. We don't want to, I think, underplay the significance of this. This is the last ISIS stronghold in Iraq, not in the entire Middle East. Of course, they're still in Syria, but in Iraq. And this involves the Iraqi military. You got Kurdish forces, U.S. forces, coalition forces. The U.S. is not leading the charge in the on the ground sense. We are leading kind of the air campaign. And so we've got troops, significant numbers actually, in this matter, in harm's way, that can be in harm's way later. This battle just began in the last 24 hours. We're going to get retired Colonel Wes Smith joining us, our senior advisor for military affairs, in the next segment of the broadcast to break this down for everybody. We've got the breaking news in the FBI interview files. These are called 302 forms. These are not leaked documents. These are up at the FBI.gov website. When they were interviewing an FBI official, we knew this existed, but we hadn't actually seen the document ourselves. All of us didn't get to read it yet. Members of Congress had, but it had not been released publicly. In this document, the FBI official says that the State Department official from Hillary Clinton's team and Undersecretary of State offered a, quote, quid pro quo. That means this for that, something for something, a bribe if the FBI would unclassify some of Hillary Clinton's emails, so change the classification of her emails. They would then allow the FBI to put agents in countries where right now they're prohibited from putting agents. Here's the important part of this. The FBI is already saying, well, we didn't agree to do this. That's fine. That may cover the FBI. But what it doesn't cover is the State Department official, the Undersecretary of State, who, by offering to make this bribe, think about the bribe that was being offered. Hey, if you'll change FBI some of the email classifications to protect Hillary Clinton politically, we will change our foreign policy, change our diplomatic strategies towards countries, and allow you to do to put your agents in places we haven't allowed you to do, because the State Department gets to have input in those decisions. It is sickening just at that point, and criminal, just the offering of the bribe. And the WikiLeaks side, you've got thousands and thousands of documents that keep being released from John Podesta. This is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign. He was also a former senior counselor to the President of the United States, President Barack Obama, so he's got the connections to both the campaign and the White House right now. They keep releasing documents and info. We got a lot of phone calls, but let me go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Than, many significant stories, whether you've got what's happened in Iraq right now in the battle to retake Mosul from ISIS, which could be extremely significant in the war against the Islamic State. But then number two, the significance of this story involving the FBI and State Department on the campaign. We've got a debate, the final debate, just two nights away, Wednesday night. And, of course, the general election just 3 weeks from now.
Well, first of all, Jordan, I think you're correct to focus on the State Department, and they're essentially bartering with foreign policy. I mean, that's what this was. They were willing to compromise U.S. foreign policy in exchange for a reclassification of these emails. But I'll tell you this, here in Washington, there are also a number who are asking about how receptive was the FBI to that overture, and maybe did that influence Director Comey's decision? And the evidence that they're pointing to, Jordan, is the fact that in one of the follow-up phone conversations after the exchange that you described, this conversation between the State Department was centered around the reclassification of emails. And then it was the FBI agent who came back to the issue of these additional slots overseas. So while it was the State Department that was offering a bribe, there are many here in Washington who think that there is now direct evidence that the FBI may have been a little receptive to that deal as well. And so there are some that are wanting to call Director Comey back and say, was this in your back of your mind when you decided not to prosecute? Did you want to make sure that the behavior of the FBI was not called into question?
We got a lot to talk about, of course, also what's happening in Iraq right now. The battle to retake Mosul from the Islamic State is ongoing. We're going to break that all down for you when we come back from this break. We'll continue to talk politics as well. If you want to talk to us on the air, it's 1-800-684-3110. Get your comments into Logan on Facebook and Periscope. We've also got significant fights for life ongoing. We're in the Ninth Circuit out in California tomorrow in the case involving those Planned Parenthood videos. We've got an email out about that at ACLJ, from ACLJ, and we'll have a blog up at ACLJ.org. We'd appreciate your support in our own ongoing fights for life around the country in our nation's courtrooms.
The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over a million babies. That's two babies killed every minute, every hour of every day. It's horrendous and unthinkable. The abortion industry even sells these murdered babies' body parts for profit. It's our duty to end these atrocities. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. This case could devastate big abortion. We're battling the abortion industry's billion-dollar taxpayer-funded resources in multiple federal courts. And we could not succeed without your support. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. For those of you on the lines now, hold on while we kind of break down this battle to retake Mosul from you. This is news that it's getting some attention, obviously. We just played a video for our Facebook and Periscope audience when this broke yesterday that the battle had begun. But since then, there's just been, you know, some basic reporting that there's been significant losses inflicted against ISIS. This battle is to push ISIS out of the last major city that they're holding on to right now and in control of in Iraq. They've still got, of course, places in Syria, but this is significant in the fight against ISIS. And I want to get into this just to explain what's at stake. It's not the U.S. forces leading this battle. I think that's why some of the attention in the news is not as focused on it. Now, we are leading part of the air campaign to help. We're part of this coalition. But I want to break this all down for you with a retired colonel, Wes Smith, who is part of, in our ACLJ office, senior advisor for military affairs of the ACLJ. Wes, let's explain to people, one, before we get into just the U.S. role here, what's happening in the last 24 hours in Russia.
Right, right. They've been planning this for a long time, but it's just in the last 24 hours that the hostilities, if you will, have actually begun. And so coalition forces led by the Iraqi army are going into Mosul, both from the north and the southeastern edge of the city. And it's a complicated battle because it's urban warfare, and they will actually have to clear the city as they go in. And as you indicated, the reports coming out are sketchy right now because it's so new and there are not a lot of media in the area.
Now, we are in control, and I say we, I mean the United States military, in the air campaign, all but one part of this battle, we have, you know, this is the U.S. planes that are dropping the initial to weaken ISIS so that these ground forces can move in. We're leading that front.
They are, and we're also leading the close air support mission, other than the Shia area because of some political, cultural, you know, concerns there. The Iraqi Air Force will take care of close air support for the Shia militias. But for the rest of the campaign, the United States is in charge of all the air support, and that includes both our aircraft and Apache attack helicopters. This will be the first time, though, that Apache helicopters, which fly at a lower altitude, are involved in close air support. So, you know, some vulnerability there. The other thing, too, though, is that with this war starting like this, we have about 5,000 U.S. troops stationed in Iraq. And most of them are in what is called an advise and assist mission, as far as Mosul is concerned. What this means is that they are not only deployed down to the battalion level, and a battalion in the Army in a war is fairly close to the front lines.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, in the advise and assist, they are actually having to go into the city of Mosul. So we have U.S. Personnel on Iraqi and Kurdish vehicles actually going into the city with them. And there are a number of reasons for this, but two of the main ones on the more complicated matters of a war, as far as directing close air support, the bombing runs, right, and also directing field artillery fire, we're using U.S. advisors to direct those two parts of the battle. So in addition to the air campaign, we have soldiers that are actually going into the city of Mosul.
You spent 26 years in the Army, two combat deployments. For people who are just joining us, we're talking to Wes Smith, who is our senior advisor for military affairs at the ACLJ, retired colonel from the U.S. Army, in this battle to retake Mosul. Just explain, because the news is certainly, this is not how the news focuses on it right now, and it's not how the Obama administration will focus on it unless they have to. And we hope that they don't, but they might, because the way it's explained is that there will be a significant number of U.S. ground forces who are going to be in harm's way at some point, whether that's tomorrow, later today in this fight, or 2 weeks from now in this fight. It's not just the pilots who ISIS has not yet had the capabilities to really put them under so much serious threat. There's always concern there, things that can go wrong. They're putting their lives at risk, obviously, especially when you've got all these other coalition forces in the air. But you've got people on the ground, U.S. forces on the ground, who are going to be in directly in harm's way very soon in this battle.
Exactly. And this is the first time this has happened in Iraq, you know, recently. Yeah, when you go into a city and you have clearing missions, and urban warfare is inherently dangerous, but when you go in like that, you know, even though they are technically there to advise and assist, you know, when someone is shooting at you, the bullets don't care if you're there to advise or assist or if you're a trigger puller. And so just by the very nature of this mission and what our troops are having to do, they will be in harm's way. And there is the potential for U.S. casualties.
Yeah, I mean, and this is with ISIS. We've already seen skirmishes with ISIS. They've gotten some media reports where we've had special forces have to get into shootouts with ISIS. We've had military killed.
Yes.
And we've had to, you know, we've also, because we've had these special forces who are directing the attacks against specific ISIS leaders, strongholds. Let's go to the significance of Mosul. You know, we keep talking, this is the last stronghold in Iraq. That is very important. We talk about ISIS and their caliphate.
Yes.
Their idea that they are, you know, not just this terror group that strikes and then runs into the hills. They have that wing of their international terror, but they are also this governing body that they govern territories. They impose their Islamic law, and that's how they recruit, is, hey, come be part of our caliphate. If they're pushed out of Iraq completely by this mission, that's a significant loss for ISIS.
It absolutely is. And intel reports indicate that ISIS has actually been intentionally evacuating some of their people back to Syria in order to preserve, you know, their own forces.
Yep.
But yeah, Mosul is, it will be a significant defeat. It is the last stronghold of ISIS in the country of Iraq.
And they have not been very successful either. I mean, ISIS in these direct conflicts, Syria, more success. They've had been able to hold on longer in some of these cities.
Right.
But you've got this kind of three-way battles going on there between Sunni rebel forces, ISIS forces, Assad forces backed by various countries. In Iraq, where the battle lines have been a bit clearer, when they've come into direct warfare, they have lost these battles ultimately. That doesn't mean there's not significant loss of life and casualties.
Right.
They have lost. This, I think, does underscore that ISIS can be defeated. It seems to be, I mean, Wes, could this kind of operation, it couldn't go forward without the U.S.
Correct.
So the Obama administration's authorized it.
Correct.
But they're not talking about it much.
Right.
Is that just their strategy to act like we're not in a war?
I think so. It follows the narrative, you know, that you know, we're not involved in wars. It also goes back to Obama's pledge to remove soldiers from Iraq. We now have 5,000, you know, right, U.S. personnel in Iraq, and that does not fit with the story of we're pulling everyone out. Of course, pulling everyone out is part of what led to the rise of ISIS in the first place, and so we're now having to go back in because of mistakes, you know, earlier on.
Let's talk about this again. We're not trying to be cynical. I keep saying that throughout this broadcast today, but we have to be realistic. We have a general election in 3 weeks in America. Could this be an Obama administration strategy? I don't think that ISIS is going to be gone in 3 weeks. But if they can push him out of Iraq, and Hillary Clinton can talk about, see, this strategy works, and whether she does that on Wednesday night or even later on into this campaign, you can see how this also has a political impact. The administration may not like going out there and kind of raising our flag, if you will, and riling people up in our country and kind of instead downplaying our role.
Very much so.
But if they get a victory, we know how this administration kind of all of a sudden you're going to say, well, what are they even talking about? If you watch the news, it wouldn't sound like this was a U.S. victory, but it, in fact, it would be. They're kind of, I think they have it both ways, if you will.
They will. They will see this as a significant victory in our fight against ISIS. Part of what comes to my mind, though, Jordan, is that, you know, and you're right, ISIS in direct engagements, they have never, you know, been battlefield worthy facing U.S. and coalition troops. They're much better at terrorism and killing innocent people. But if we were to take this same tactic and go to Syria, to their actual caliphate headquarters there, we could defeat them there militarily as well and in fairly short order, except there are two complicating factors, and that's Russia and Syria.
Sure. And we know from this, the reports that we've seen and we played during our break for our Facebook and Periscope audience, the news reports over the weekend, this is not necessarily, though we're not 100, the way the reporting has been is a little unclear. This is not necessarily shock and awe over in 24 hours.
No, this will be a long campaign. Mosul is a city of about 1.5 million people. Okay. And it's urban. And so they say that ISIS has dug tunnels under the city in order to arrange for ambush attacks. They have planted IEDs and booby traps. And this is really hard to get your mind around. But our military sources are saying they will literally have to go door to door, house to house in a city of over 1 million people to finally clear ISIS out. It's further complicated, Jordan, by the fact that Mosul, as far as their Arab population, the Muslim population, they are Sunni. And so is ISIS. And so there are some members of the population that are sympathetic to ISIS cause. Not many, but some. And so it's a very complicated threat landscape that our troops are going into.
Yeah, though sometimes the ISIS fighters are identifiable by kind of what the fatigues they may be dressed in. It's very easy for them to take those off. They're not all wearing, you know, official uniforms, say, I'm ISIS at this house and I'm not ISIS at this house. So you understand, folks, then you've got just the hostilities that can be involved here where people are not necessarily reporting on their neighbors as well. We got 40 seconds left, folks. We'll continue to update you on this with Wes Smith, who is our senior advisor on military affairs here, 26 years in the military, including 2 combat tours, a retired colonel in our U.S. Army, because this battle is significant in the fight against ISIS. We want to see ISIS destroyed. Does it really matter to us which administration is in charge politically if ISIS is destroyed and our troops are being protected as best they can be when they're in harm's way? So keep them in your prayers, because it is happening as we speak and not being reported as much specifically. We come back. It's open line. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get back into politics. We know that's what's on the front and center of everybody's mind. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over 1 million babies. That's 2 babies killed every minute, every hour of every day. It's horrendous and unthinkable. The abortion industry even sells these murdered babies' body parts for profit. It's our duty to end these atrocities. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. This case could devastate big abortion. We're battling the abortion industry's billion-dollar taxpayer-funded resources in multiple federal courts. And we could not succeed without your support. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online aclj.org.
Secula Live. This is Jordan Secula. I would encourage you, if you're just joining us in our final segment of the broadcast, go back and listen to our last segment with Wes Smith, who's our senior advisor for analyst for military affairs, because the battle against ISIS in Mosul, to retake Mosul in Iraq, is very significant. We want to get to your phone calls. Stan Bennett, our director of government affairs, is still with us. Logan is back in our studio as well, taking your comments on Facebook and Periscope, and on the phones in our final segment. Let's get through these calls.
All right, Teddy's calling California. And hold a half hour. Thanks, Teddy.
Hey, Teddy, let me tell you, we'll send you a signed copy of Unholy Alliance for holding on. Thanks for being with us.
Excellent. I've got a statement and one question.
Sure.
Okay. I'm in Northern California, and probably 85% of the people that I talk to around here or that I know on Facebook and such are voting for Trump.
Yep.
Why does she still have a lead in the polls? And my question is, why has she even got a chance to even be thought of winning this election?
Well, I think one is that it is a little bit tough to imagine how Hillary Clinton continues to survive, but for Donald Trump. So you live in an area of California that you've got a lot of friends voting for Trump. But let me just tell you, unless every poll's wrong, off by 15 and 20 points, Hillary Clinton's going to easily win the state of California. That's a ton of electoral votes that she can automatically have. You're not going to see, you know, a significant campaign from either of them there because of that. So you're in a very blue state. Right now, we're in a very red state, as we're talking to you. It's likely Donald Trump is going to win big where we are. And so the opposite is not quite as big of a state as California, not as many electoral votes. So she goes into Election Day with more reliably blue states. This is true for every Republican versus Democrat presidential campaign. The Democrat has more electoral votes basically automatically than the Republican. So the Republicans got to fight harder to win the votes, because you have the coast, especially Northeast, West Coast, that go reliably Democrat. As you get more and more interior, and then maybe in the Southeast of our country, but the Democrats have been making gains again in the South, states that are more reliably Republican. They're not quite as big. So because of that, you have these swing states like Florida and Ohio. Now, I do want to point out, we'll get this in the second call, Than, it's interesting, Trump has been very critical of the polls, but now he's praising a new one by CNN that shows him up four in Ohio. Now, if these polls are accurate, Donald Trump, I want to make clear to everybody, it may feel like this election's over, but it is not. If he is still tied with Hillary Clinton or leading Hillary Clinton in a state as important as Ohio, this election's not over.
Yeah, and I think Donald Trump can still win the presidency, Jordan. I mean, I think the map is restricting against him. I think he now probably has to win North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania to pull that off. But we're still within that margin of error. And I would just say this. Donald Trump only has a chance because he's running against Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton only has a chance because he's running against Donald Trump. I would tell you this. If Tim Kaine or Mike Pence were at the top of either of their respective tickets, I think the election would be over.
I agree.
Neither of these candidates is popular, and as a result, both have a chance to win.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what Dan just said. So if you had Mike Pence versus Hillary Clinton, Mike Pence would be now way outside the margin of error. He'd have the states. Yeah, it may be still a close election because the country's divided,
right,
but it'd be in his favor. It'd be very tough for Clinton to recover. And the flip side, if it was Tim Kaine versus Donald Trump, I could see where Tim Kaine may have some issues, like Pence would have with maybe they're not strong enough. But again, imagine them versus Trump, the difference is there, that probably he'd be up 10. Would it be totally done yet? Maybe not, but it would be heavily leaning in one of their directions based off even the partisan nature of our country. Back to the phones we go.
Catherine in Washington, you're on the air.
Hey, Catherine.
Yes, hi. I'm calling because I have been trying to convince myself that once they count all the votes and we know who the winner is, that the country is just going to settle down and we'll recognize who's going to be our leader for the next 4 or 8 years. But I'm seeing so much violent disturbing opposition to either one of the candidates that, to me, I don't think the fight's going to be over once the votes are counted. I think that there is going to be continual firestorm in the country against whoever is going to win.
Well, the next president of the United States has a significant task because our country is not only more divided than ever before, it's divided in a way that's becoming more public. Before it was maybe, yes, we have about half the country more left, half the country more right, but it wasn't such a public battle. We kind of respected each other for the positions we held, even during elections when we got very passionate about it. So I agree with you, Catherine. It seems uncertain. And the way Donald Trump is kind of putting it out there that it may be rigged, you could see why how that turns very scary. A point if he kind of sounds that alarm. On the other hand, you got Hillary Clinton saying, you know, her main job would be if Trump were win to fight back, that she's not going to flee the country, but does she be fighting back against this? I just want to put out to everybody, I get those concerns. I don't think that they're totally fake. That it's overreacting to think that, you know, you could have some problems in this election because of the rhetoric being used. And whether or not it's legitimate or not, will it matter if people are feeling like, you know, they don't even want to show up at their polls on election day because of those concerns? Right. Let's go back to the phones.
All right, quickly, let's get to Barbara in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Jordan. I have a question, and I'm not sure that I can't quote this exactly, but last week either you or Jay made a statement that Obama can't be arrested because he's the president of the United States. My question is, if that's true, I wonder if Hillary isn't writing out all of this stuff that's going on, hoping that no one can hold her accountable once she's president.
Well, certainly Catherine, Barbara, I would say that helps. Hillary Clinton, you know, if she becomes president of the United States, the only way she's accountable is she's impeached. And usually, and though you can be held legally accountable as president, usually what you'll see is the if you did get impeached and that process began, you leave office and your vice president, you know, pardons you. That's what's happened in the past to make sure that you can't actually be prosecuted. That's a power that the president has in our Constitution. So, yes, I think that that could be driving some of Hillary Clinton, but I think the much bigger drive, let's be honest, is power. Right. She wants that power. That's what drives the Clinton and the Clinton campaign.
Let's try to take at least one more call. Aaron in New York, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, guys? Enjoying your conversation. I have a couple questions. One, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. We have a couple other people running, and we never, ever see them on CNN, NBC, you know, all the news. We don't hear nothing about them, and they have better topics. My second question about this whole movement in ISIS, you know, I hope we do win and all that, but how much of it do we really believe? Because the Obama administration has lied to us before.
Well, I think that if ISIS no longer has control of Mosul in a month from now, we will know that. So that's not something the administration, that does not mean that ISIS has been defeated. That does not mean they don't pose even maybe more of a significant threat to the United States because they've lost their territory in the Middle East. Now we've got to deal with them as they kind of disperse back into the world because they've recruited all these fighters. That's part one. Part two, the third party candidates, none of them met the threshold to make the debates. So that was one reason why. In the past, you've seen them make that threshold of polling so that they're actually at the presidential debates. Jill Stein couldn't do it. Gary Johnson can do it. Evan McMullen could not do it. I'd say he is the one candidate who's got interest because of his impact on Utah. We talked about that some Friday.
Right.
We can talk about it more as we get it more into politics. But that is why the third party, none of them qualified for the debates. And that was, again, they just didn't have enough support to do it that time. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to update you. Go to ACLJ.org. Plenty of news, plenty to discuss as we head into an important week in the election.
The American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront when it comes to protecting human life. Every year, big abortion slaughters over 1 million babies. This week, we're in federal appeals court in defense of a former board member of the pro-life investigative journalists who exposed the abortion industry's gruesome tactics. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now in this critical fight. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or online aclj.org.